Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to some music and discussing ideas of merit, cool, bit of entertainment and information for Sonic Mind. And for this, this is 1924 already here, but I want to acknowledge the warmth of Louis Armstrong up until. Sort of the punctuation and audacity, it was often in the background when you think about marching bands. And he was the very first. What I love about the story of Louis Armstrong is that he was born out of very difficult times, he prevailed. He was born in New Orleans, and being a black man was considered at the time, I'm told, beneath in the peck social order, beneath the Creole. So he was the bottom of the social ladder, and yet he was he gained attention because of his confidence with the trumpet, and from a very early age he was gaining a reputation, gaining a following. Almost as if if you think people with privilege, born into privilege, often have advantages that allow them to accelerate and live well through life. He was even in his last days, all through his life, he was a person that bore no grudge or ill will toward anybody. If ever there was an ambassador of humanity, it's Louis Armstrong, a wonderful man. He lived his whole life after he married his third wife, Lucille, fourth wife. He lived his whole life in a very modest house in Queens, in Brooklyn, New York. It was an interesting neighborhood. Where a lot of the jazz greats were living, all in very modest terms. He did have a very up-to-date sound studio in there, but other than that, it was a family home. Anybody who knew Louis knew if the porch light was on, then they were welcome in. There was somebody up. Count Basie lived in the neighborhood, and the difference about Count Basie was that he had a swimming pool in his backyard. They visited back and forth, and yes, they did collaborate and talk. That's Louis Armstrong. Just like most things about Masonic effects, the order that in my mind should not exist. How do we have something that it defies sort of the contemporary sense of bearing and reason? It doesn't exist. We don't have it continuing on because it's a cute idea, it's because it has something valuable. It always had something valuable to offer, and that's the keenness of it that I think a lot of people wonder about. How does this happen? Certainly, I think there's a lot of listeners out there that wonder how it happens. It constantly being reinvented by the perspectives and history, unique histories of our newest members blending with our oldest members. The interesting part about that is that it's as you age or as you mellow as a Mason, as you adapt to the values and the lifestyles, first you have to understand what they are. That means you have to do a bit of learning. You need to have a good mentor and or be a student. If you don't have a good mentor available to you, or hopefully you can, I can be a meager substitution here on Masonic Effects. But once those ideas begin to gel, we realize that we have now, help me here, is it a legacy that we've been given or a heritage? I'd be hard pressed to distinguish between the two, and I know there is a difference. But it, all of a sudden, we have this need to pass on masonry, and in its completion, not to whittle away at its foundation, so that we each a generation are leaving less and less for the next generation, but to pass it on in its completeness, because there are aspects about the craft that no one in its totality will be able to understand, nor is that a necessity, but there are different perspectives and different wrinkles that each of us brings. We are each with those questions about that we want answered, that we seek to have answered. And it's important that you have that unanswerable question in front of you. The answer that presses you to define the and to help arrive at some understanding is good enough. Is getting by with the minimal enough? If it is for you, that speaks more about your character than it does about the craft. It's not whether the craft is weak because we have weak links in the chain. It's what that weak link does to in terms of self-improvement. We all start off as weak links in this chain. We all do. We start off, though, with the premise that we are essentially good men, good people. I say that advisedly now, not to be politically coy or politically correct, but at the outside, to the outside world, to the majority, what are we now? About 3 million of us worldwide, ballparking it here. The outside world, the 7 billion of our neighbors, may not and probably don't distinguish between regular and irregular masonry or our various organizational divisions and accountabilities. Is there women in Freemasonry? Absolutely, yes. We know that it exists. Are there complications? Is it a complex relationship? Yes, of course. And nobody seems to be within the Masonic community. We seem to be comfortable within our own skin. It is what it is. So for you and I to be talking about standing up on our hind legs and talking about there not being women in masonry, well, how do we answer that? It makes us, particularly in this day and age, look a bit uninformed. And I don't think that does this disservice to either the future generations of Masons or to our brethren or to our order, certainly. Nevertheless, today it's a welcome day. We have 14 nations tuning in to Masonic Effects now. Belgium has been added to the list. Welcome to our listeners in Belgium. It's a pleasure. And a shout out, as it's been a number of weeks since I've done this, a thank you and a heartfelt expression of gratitude to our listeners from Brazil and South Korea and the United States and China and India and the Cameroon and Russia and Uganda and the Philippines. Yes, here at home in Canada, the UK, of course, and France and Austria. We have woven in an Austrian connection here to the music I've selected today. So sit back and enjoy. I certainly hope you do what we have in store for you, and help. Give me some help here. I need it. You know, you've seen me in action before. This is Bill Evans. Like Somebody in Love. It's just a beautiful tune. Well, judge for yourself, John. Didn't think of himself as a genius, but he thought of himself as somebody who worked very hard over the years to get to the point where the subconscious mind can take over while playing. What do you think? It's a wonderful quotation by Mr. Slick. Starting off the show right, I'd say. It only get better from that. My goodness. We have, I'd like to tuck into the commentary for today. If only what I want mathematics that could be influenced. If only would I want mathematics that could be influenced. Yeah, you think about it. Mathematics, the geometrician, an important aspect of masonry, it offers us a consistency, an honesty, a truth. Today, we wrestle with that, don't we? We have a growing sense of embellishment in the media, an awareness of it, and a sense that it's difficult to understand the nature of the truth around us. Certainly our elected representatives are suspect. There's a growing cynicism that's being voiced and put out there, which is probably healthy, although it might be painful. But it's predicated by something that's a hallmark of Masonry, of you and I and of all people who ascribe to Masonic values. Honesty. The one thing that we trade on is the consistency, an honest, as my grandfather, very worshipful brother, Toombs, taught me when I was a boy, an honest man doesn't need laws. An honest man doesn't need a policeman around to tell him the difference between right and wrong. You know, he was speaking, I think, echoing Masonic values. It's like you and I. In our heart, we know if we're diligent, if we are living a life in balance. It's not remarkably automatic notion that if we ask the question, are you doing enough? Well, the right answer is, of course, no, I'm not doing enough. I could always do more. Well, that's exactly an impoverished answer. The correctness or the ethical answer might be, I propose, to think about balance. Not as ladders and hierarchies, something on the top, something on the bottom. No, that, I think, is an expression of a lack of fulfillment. It's the achievement of balance in your life. Ambition, reflection, compassion. Understanding. I'm not in a good position to be subscribing to any of this to you. So long ago, I lost the ability to make small talk. It's probably an occupational hazard, but nevertheless, I have to relearn it. How do you make small talk? I'd much prefer small talk, I guess, that's meaningful. It has some substance to it. And maybe I'm, again, as usual, being a bit harsh on myself, but you know what I mean. Here's a commentary that helps draw this together. Well, I certainly hope. But remember, here I could be, I need you to be a bit generous with me because my views are slightly askew today. This is the equinox plus one. So I'm no longer in balance. That day has passed. There's now more darkness in my world than light. And in your world, in the southern hemisphere, there's more light than darkness. We balance each other off. In a world without a sense of right and wrong, what's right, what's wrong, with a star? Or with the impact of the star, or a pulsar, you know. I'm going to talk to you a bit later about about the discovery of pulsars. And our insight needs to be able to govern our lives and to shape us. Our insight as men and our sense of our desire for partnerships that are equal. I think that it's a weakness that anybody has this sense of dominance. A sense of leadership is different. I think true leadership, it's like the difference between somebody that dresses up and a true Mason. True Mason's describing as acquiring. Here, if only, would I want mathematics that could be influenced? Whether we apply ourselves to being a true Mason, whether we are housekeepers in the palace or students of understanding, we stand shoulder to shoulder with opportunity. When we ask the question of ourselves, the first answer may not be the most accurate, but the first impulse that comes to mind. I wonder what advantage comes from only studying Masonic publications, only associating with brethren, only attending Masonic function. Some of us come into the order with ambitions. It produces a sense of accomplishment, but does it define? What needs are fulfilled? The secrets revealed at those within are those within the human heart. Are you open-minded and applying yourself to the duties? Well, good question. Sometimes we have to savor the ideas. You alone know the truth. Are you as generous and charitable with need in mind or pulse? You know. Little Chet Baker and Paul Blay. Paul Blay on piano and Chet Baker on horn, If I Should Lose You. Sweet music. Sweet music. I want to tell you a story. I think that it's inspiring and also indicative of something. This is something that recently came to my attention because of a guest speaker. Now, that came to us from a visiting professor from Oxford University. Oxford was formed before the Aztecs were still predominant. It was back about, 1000, maybe? Something like that, close to that. This, if I at times here at Masonic Effects, I tend to borrow history or refer to history a lot. It's because I come from a nation. I am in a nation, and I feel that patriotism and a love for this land, as you do for yours, that is, 151 years old. Now think back when your nations were 151 years old. What kind of condition were you in? So I kind of think comparatively. We're a great, beautiful landscape with a very, very small population, a tenth the size of the United States, a tenth the size of Britain. Very, very small. Not as small as some of the countries that listeners are tuning in from. So we rely on the history. Our history, if we look around, is of billions of years old. It's rock and it's mountains and a glaciation, the ice age, 16,000 years ago? Not that long ago. Here, this is I'll leave this for your imagination. This is about a person who had an interesting event. This person arrived in Cambridge University, and there felt that everybody else around was brilliant. Have you ever had that feeling? Everybody's brilliant, and I'm not, and I have to work my tail off just to feel that I fit in. That confidence that comes after a second when you're not so focused on what's going on around you, but your own work. But they began to feel that they hadn't been tossed out so for not being bright enough, so it might be worthwhile to get at the project that was assigned. And at least if the person worked really hard, the guilt of failing would not be there. So the project involved building a radio telescope. That's like a clothesline array of wires. You've seen those, some of you are nearly as old as I am. And it's designed to net radio waves from the cosmos and then understand what that static, what's producing that static. But remember, late 1967, this person became aware of an unusual beat on the celestial receiver. And it drew attention only because this person had been working intently on the reams of data while trying to make sure nothing had gone wrong. And the recurring signal pulsed like clockwork every 1.337 seconds, steady and precise. And it seemed suspiciously like a human-generated signal. But after tracking the source for a great while, the source of the pulses over several weeks, it was realized that it was moving with the stars. And the person's supervisor, Anthony Hewis, was also convinced that this was something significant and nicknamed the source LGM, Little Green Men. And the two went on working to characterize the signal and even check whether it was some kind of message from an extraterrestrial civilization. And that was quickly ruled out. But the signal defied explanation until the telescope turned up a second pulsing source, that of a third, then a third and a fourth. And the correct explanation finally emerged in early 1968. Each pulsing radio source was the result of a supernova, a massive star exploding and leaving behind a dense, rapidly spinning core. And in a story in the Daily Telegraph, the British science journalist Anthony Michaelis helpfully coined the term pulsar to describe the new celestial phenomena. 6 years later, this person's colleagues were outraged when only Dr. Hewis and Martin Ryle, another pioneering radio astronomer at Cambridge, were awarded what became known as the Nobel Prize. No hyphen Bell. The person remains circumspect about the controversy. As the first Nobel ever given for an astronomical discovery, the award was a huge precedent for the entire field. And I was rather proud that it was these stars that did it. As for whether the breakthrough prize amounts to a sort of poetic justice, here. We're talking, of course, about Dame Jocelyn Bell Brunel. She grew up in Northern Ireland in the 50s. She just won the most valuable, the Beakerhead Festival Award, $3 million. And she turned it over. She turned over the prize to fund research. And we'd hear that sense that, you know, think about it. Why was this person ignored by the Nobel Committee? Was it because she's a visiting professor at Oxford University? This is a woman that has incredible ability and happened to have made this discovery. Was it because she was a woman? It's because she, you know. It makes you wonder. It's sad if that's all that we are in this now in the 21st or 20th, then of the 21st century. If that's all we can do, it's a very sad indictment of mankind. But astronomical discovery reveals so much. So think about this. Do we, you know, credit where credit is due is not always popular. Not always popular. There is more to the world than we know. And the mathematics is pouring forward. The science is moving forward. And the genius is moving forward. And as ever before, that sense of where people are focusing on the tension and the animosities that occur between people, and the pettiness of politics, more so than ever, I think Masonry has a role, a calming effect, if little more than that, that pivot point, that stepping stone in time, that stabilizing element. We are of the past moving toward the future, just as all things are. We struggle with the light. We struggle with time and space. We learn. We learn so much more than we knew when we were boys, when we were children. So much more. We are living in a global community that maybe was defined when we first had those pictures of the Earth from outer space, that blue pearl floating in the darkness. But our unprecedented levels of communication are challenging us. They're challenging our notions of each other, where the disparities of culture and generosity of spirit are known, are being revealed. The hobnail boot of authority is now being filmed and put out there for the world to judge. Oh, there's a new level of accountability. Make no mistake about that. The dirty little secrets, the meagerness, that schadenfreude, cause pain to get somebody to do things, cause fear, is being replaced by notions of respect. If nothing else, Masonry champions that role. Respect. And to do that, we bring a dignity to human life. And we don't do that at the end of a gun or with a boot pressed on somebody's head. That's not about the abuse of authority. No. This is about accountability and doing it right. Doing it right. Freemasonry, remember, expresses a sense of compassion and as a duty. But some of the little secrets, I guess, that have occurred to us have really enlightened the minds of our scientists to arrive at the deeper sense of satisfaction in life, that calmness, that centering, is to do something for somebody else. And no, you don't do this by imposing yourself on other people. That's just plain ugly. Or as my daughter would say, that's just sucking the fun out of everything. No. This is watching. How do you apply the motto of Masonry? Aude fide tace. How? Which one? What do they mean to you? Well, when you button up for a minute, you sit quietly, you learn it, you listen, you hear a lot of things when you're not chattering away, distracted. You learn things about yourself, but my goodness, you learn so much more about the world around you. And you begin to be discerning what's needed and when. And you think about the challenge that we have, it's so mischievous, it's wonderful. That the highest form of charity, different levels of charity, who knew? The highest form is to perform those acts of charity where the person doesn't know that the recipient, the person generating that is you. They don't even need to be aware that they're the recipient of some act of charity. And that's not the meagerness of a hand down. This is the notion of a hand up. Assistance. Not that mean-spirited, let them stand up and get out of their own mess, or the pettiness of blaming people for their own situation, blaming the victims. That's just shattering the human spirit. No, we can do much better than that. We're going to play a little bit with time again here for you and with you. From 1964, this is a live performance in Sweden. By a very, very sweet voice, one that I was taken with back in my university days when I knew very little. I was learning more. My friend Jerry from, cross paths at the university, he was from Brooklyn. He was the most interesting fellow, and he had this collection of incredible jazz with him. And I discovered Sarah Vaughan, and that was like a relationship that's continued to this very moment. When she sings, it's like nobody else is in the room and she's only singing to me. This is from 1964, a live performance in Sweden. You'll recognize it. Misty. Yeah.
I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree. Feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your head. Walk my way, and a thousand violins. Might be the sound of your hello that means if I hear, I get misty the moment you're near. You can see that you are leading me on. That is just what I want you to do. Don't you know this? On my own, well, I wander through this wonderland alone, never knowing my right foot from my left, my heart from my glove. I'm too busy and too much. You can see that you're leading me on, and it's just what I want you to do.
That voice. Sarah Vaughan doing Misty for us. I think it's a very apt intro to our discussion today about symbols. This is may come as a bit of a surprise to understanding. You know, I think Masonic literacy is quite important, but I've stopped quite some time ago to try and put what I was learning in Masonic vaults. There's some remarkable research out there to try and put it into some context. I felt that it was a little thin if I was just reading about or learning about the charity lecture, for example, without trying to at least understand the context. How did it come about? And so that led me to wonder, become curious about the history of different times. What was going on, for example, that led to the development of organized the Grand Lodge. Certainly, Masonry is like the country I'm in. We formed, took our constitution from Britain in 1982. We were the Dominion of Canada up until that point. Oh, we were a very good group of colonialists, colonial subjects, as much as we possibly could. And now we're starting to expand our lungs and stumble along as youthful as we are, learning to walk for ourselves. But time has been very generous to us. I wanted to take that notion of context and keep it in mind as I talk to you about the notion of symbols in Freemasonry. It's not that apparently. it's not that Masonry discovered all of these symbols, but it seems that we were picking up on notions that were contemporary. In general use, as this comes from the work of W. H. Rylands in his notes on some Masonic symbols, and I just find it fascinating stuff. He is referring to the 16th century architect John Thorpe, and speaks to us about the triangle. And it was considered in the building profession as a symbol of the Trinity. But in general use, in general life, the use of accepted symbols of this nature was much more common in many cases when Masonry took those symbols into use. There was nothing unusual about the practice. Masonry has survived with these symbols. It's like those faiths that sort of picked up pagan ceremonies and made them their own. You had an audience. Well, you know, this is what we, Saturnalia, this is what we celebrate, and we have a different term now, but we still have the celebration. It makes it easier for people to get their minds, open their minds to innovation. Hmm? Masonry survived with these symbols incorporated while the general practice has fallen into disuse. You don't see the symbol of Trinity being commonplace anymore, but we've continued to use these symbols for our own purposes. And even now, their general significance is often not remembered. One of the more interesting suggestions for the original use of the letter G, is that right? You follow where I'm going with this, is in a Masonic connection, arises in connection with the shape of the square. When we were talking about working tools, several writers are quoted on the true shape of the square when used in a Masonic connection. There seems to be a good deal of opinion which says that a square with arms of uneven length that was used in early Masonry, while there is no doubt that it was known as a gallows square for at one time in popular use. You know, you've seen a builder's square, one arm is longer than the other. J.S.M. Ward, in an interpretation of our Masonic symbols, pointed out that this shape for the square is precisely the shape of the Greek letter gamma, the equivalent to G in the Roman alphabet, and further that in ecclesiastical script used in medieval Europe, these very gallows square shape was used to represent the letter G. This refers to the capital letter only and not the small letter. Ward also agrees with an opinion of Sir John Coburn that the square and the letter G in early lodges were depicted by the same shape. Coburn is quoted as saying that it was the letter G which the early Masons wished to depict, symbolizing God, and so they used this gallows square shape to represent the letter. And it could just as easily have been the early Masons wished to show the square as the major moral instrument of the craft, and then found that it would also represent the letter G for geometry. Whichever is the right way around, there could well be some justification for Ward's assertion that if a lodge is to be absolutely correctly furnished according to the original tradition, that the symbol at the center of the lodge, whether hung from the ceiling or placed in the pentacle on the floor, should take the form of a gallows square. Son of a gun, hmm? One of the fullest examinations of this symbol is in the letter G by Harry Carr, who very much like his work, in Ars Quatuor Coronatium, volume 76. Did you get that? Ars Quatuor Coronatium, volume 76. Carr traces the early references to it as 1730 in Pritchard's Masonry Dissected, which is also the first reference of any length to a 3-degree system rather than one of 2 degrees. In Pritchard, the The letter G is a symbol of the second degree and stands for geometry. And later references have it as in the center, and there is ample confirmation of its being by the 1740s, the symbol which converted the lodge to a fellowcraft's lodge, and that it was associated with a blazing star or glory, as Hutchison has it. And in the satirical exposure type paper on the skull, the Miserables, first published in 1741, there is reference to the letter G as the item which converts a lodge into a fellowcraft's lodge. I'll wrap up with a note by John Custos. When he was examined by the Inquisition in Portugal in 1743 in describing the lodge, remember, this was dangerous times. The floor of the said lodge has a design in white chalk wherein are formed several borders serving as ornaments, together with a blazing star with a G in the middle, signifying the fifth science of geometry, to which all officers, craftsmen, and apprentices should aspire. And this is the translation of the actual Inquisition records, and it's that it was used by Dr. Sidney Vacher in his paper on John Custos. The word officers appears to have been consistently used in the translation back into English, where he would use the word fellow crafts or craftsmen. Custos had already lived in Lisbon for upwards of 2 years, and previously to that time had spent some time in France. He was referring to English practice in the 1730s. It had been suggested that he was confusing the practice in France at that time, and although in this respect it was likely to have been the same as in England. In any case, in rites that stem from the French masonry of the time and shortly after, the letter G, usually in a blazing star, is still generally found as the particular symbol of the second degree. Later in the century, William Preston also refers to the use of the letter G in Fellowcraft's Lodge, but places it in the center of the covering, thereby suggesting it was the practice of some to suspend the G as long ago as the early 1800s. Dr. Wynne Westcott suggests that the origin of the G was the Hebrew letter Gamal, third of the Hebrew alphabet, and so representing the figure three for the Trinity, and so its representation of God. Carr also mentions others who suggest the Hebrew letter, but some of these explanations seem a little far-fetched. A little bit about the letter G, symbolism around us. So it was commonplace at the time. Masonry is certainly influenced by geography, the geopolitical situation around us. I'm going to have to come back to, we didn't even get into the work today, the poetry of Christine de Bizan. I'll do that next time. She was an Italian-born, and she worked out of France, 14th century feminist, she's referred to, but a brilliant and influential thinker nevertheless. It's been a pleasure to have you join us today, as always. I hope that we've been informative and useful to you, and I look forward to having you join us next week. I, in the meantime, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Look well to yourself, treat yourself with some generosity, and pursue that sense of balance in your life. Live in the moment. If you're troubled and worrying about what happened yesterday and the day before that, you're living only in your imagination. If we think about the work of the great physicists of our time, in fact, past, present, and future may be all compressed into one. So past and the future live only in our minds. Enjoy this. Enjoy your week, and I'll see you soon. This is with the Peggy Lee, when she was very young, the Dave Barbo Quartet, 1950. Why don't you do it right? See ya. Thank you.
need some money.